What's up? It's me, Don Tolliver. If I could describe the open ear bud, I would describe it as very seamless. It's like you clip it onto your ear, and then sometimes you can forget it's there, but it's not going anywhere because it's like clipped. It's kind of crazy. If I could bring my music with me wherever I go, it'd just make life easier and seamless without interruption. To be able to have the music on hand like that without any interruptions would be great. Check out Bose.com for more.
Life comes at you fast, which is why it's important to find some time to relax. A little you time. Enter Chumba Casino with no download required. You can jump on anytime, anywhere for the chance to redeem some serious prizes. So treat yourself with Chumba Casino and play over 100 online casino-style games, all for free. Go to ChumbaCasino.com to collect your free welcome bonus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms.
Oh, hi. This is Chelsea Handler from the Dear Chelsea podcast. This episode is brought to you by Opill, the first over-the-counter daily birth control pill available in the U.S. I love shedding light on what's important for women's healthcare, and one thing that makes healthcare easier is making birth control more convenient to access. Well, let me introduce Opill. Opill is a daily birth control pill that is FDA approved, full prescription strength, and estrogen free. Plus, there's no prescription needed. Finally, the days of needing a prescription for birth control are over, a sentence I very much enjoy saying. This is our moment to take control of our health and reproductive journeys because Opill is birth control in your control. Opill is available online and at most major retailers. Use code OPILLOTC. OPILLOTC for 25% off your first month of Opill at opill.com.
The holidays are here at the Home Depot, so let's get to decorating. Find your perfect tree in our huge assortment of shapes, sizes, and styles, like the easy-to-assemble Jackson Noble Fir with pre-lit branches perfect for styling with all your favorite ornaments, or the flocked Starry Light Fraser Fir with over 1,900 pre-lit memory wire branches that keep their shape so it's ready right out of the box.
Ooh.
Find the perfect tree now at the Home Depot and enjoy free delivery on most holiday decor. Subject to availability. See homedepot.com/delivery for details.
This is Simone Boyce from The Bright Side. Beauty is about more than just beauty. It's about worth, individuality, and the power that comes from being your truest self. At L'Oréal Paris, beauty means embracing who you already are, enhancing the diverse features, experiences, and personality that makes you, well, you. L'Oréal's beauty essentials combine innovative products with that classic Parisian touch to help you feel like your most confident self. Because taking on the world is a little less scary when you feel ready for your close-up. L'Oréal Paris. Because you're worth it. Learn more at L'OrealParis.com.
This is Lee Habib, and this is Our American Stories. And our next story comes to us from a man who is simply known as the History Guy. His videos are watched by hundreds of thousands of people of all ages on YouTube. The History Guy is also heard here at Our American Stories. 400 million pounds of cranberries are consumed by Americans each year. 20% of that is during the week of Thanksgiving. That's 80 million pounds in a week. And 5 million gallons of jelly cranberry sauce are consumed by Americans every holiday season as well. Here's the History Guy to share the story of the Great Cranberry Scare of 1959.
The history of U.S. regulation of domestically produced food and pharmaceuticals goes back to the end of the 19th century, and a pioneering researcher named Harvey Washington Wiley, who was the chief chemist of the Department of Agriculture's Division of Chemistry. And from those early beginnings, a regulatory environment developed in fits and starts over time as consumers and government and industry tried to develop the best way to protect the nation's food supply. And one of the first great tests of that regulatory environment came in 1959, when a new regulation ran into a venerable product and resulted in what has been described as the nation's first great food scare. The Great Cranberry Scare of 1959 changed the way Americans looked at their food, trusted their government, and consumed their cranberries. It's history that deserves to be remembered. Born in 1844, Harvey Wiley was a Civil War veteran who had degrees in both medicine and chemistry. He was offered the post of chief chemist for the Department of Agriculture in 1882, largely because of his expertise in the chemistry of sugar, as the department was interested in growing a U.S. sugar industry based on sorghum. In the position, Wiley started conducting research into the adulteration and misbranding of food and drugs on the American market, including so-called poison squad studies, where the effects of a diet consisting in part of the various preservatives were tested on human volunteers. The studies and subsequent publications moved the public, including a campaign where 1 million U.S. women wrote the White House and spurred Congress to pass the landmark Consumer Protection Act called the Pure Food and Drug Act of 1906, also called the Wiley Act. For his contributions, Wiley was popularly called the father of the Pure Food and Drugs Act. While the Act gave the Division of Chemistry some regulatory power, its ability to enforce regulation was constantly challenged, and the ever-present wrangling between industry and regulation led to a 1927 reorganization of the Division of Chemistry into the Food, Drug, and Insecticide Organization, which then, in 1930, was renamed the Food and Drug Administration, or FDA. A growing consumer movement, pressured by muckraking journalists and events such as the tragic mass poisoning caused by the untested pharmaceutical elixir sulfanilamide that killed 100 people in 1937, pressed Congress to give the FDA significantly more robust powers with the 1938 Federal Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act. The act has been amended many times and today is the center of the Food and Drug Administrations, which today has nearly 15,000 employees and a budget in excess of $5 billion, regulatory power. One of the amendments to the act was driven by James Delaney, a U.S. congressman from New York, who chaired a select committee to conduct an investigation and study of the use of chemicals, pesticides, and insecticides in and with respect to food products. The results of his findings resulted in the 1958 Food Additives Amendment to the Food, Drugs, and Cosmetic Act that was commonly called the Delaney Clause. It read, "The Secretary of the Food and Drug Administration shall not approve for use in food any chemical additive found to induce cancer in man or after test found to induce cancer in animals." The reasoning behind the strict nature of the Delaney Clause was stated by influential researcher Dr. Wilhelm Fuper, who testified before Congress. "I do not believe that one can establish a safe dose of carcinogens," he said. "I do not think that we have the method or evidence available by which we can reliably determine a safe dose." The legislation was undoubtedly well-intended, but it would lead to some thorny questions, as we have found out that essentially pretty much anything can give a rat cancer if you give it to them in a large enough dose. And one of the first tests of the amendment had to do with the berry from a dwarf evergreen shrub called Vaccinium macrocarpon, otherwise known as the North American cranberry. Cranberries are naturally hard, sour, and bitter. The name is likely derived from craneberry and is because part of the flower of the shrub resembles the neck, head, and bill of a crane. There are many craneberry varieties in Europe where the name was derived. But the North American berries were introduced to colonists by Narragansett peoples who had harvested wild berries at least from the 16th century, perhaps much farther back. The berries were often ground with dried meats into pemmican, a highly nutritious preserved food that was a significant part of Native American cuisine. The berries were also used for red dyes, and due to their astringent qualities, in medical poultices. Despite the sour taste, they were recognized fairly early for their nutritional value, with a 1672 book noting they're excellent against the scurvy, a quality derived from their high vitamin C content. The same text noted their sour taste and said that they were generally boiled down with sugar to make a sauce for meat that is a delicate sauce, especially with roasted mutton. To understand how cranberries fit in with the Delaney Clause, you have to understand the unique nature of the fruit. Cranberries grow on trailing vines like a strawberry, but the vines thrive on a special combination of soils and water properties found in wetlands. Cranberries grow in beds layered with sand, peat, and gravel that are commonly called bogs. The bogs were originally formed by receding glaciers, which carved impermeable kettle holes lined with clay. The clay lining prevented materials from leaching into the groundwater, and as the glaciers melted, rocks and organic materials were deposited on top of the clay, creating the ideal environment for cranberries, which require acid peat soil, an adequate fresh water supply, and a growing season that extends from April to November. Wild cranberries of Massachusetts, for example, flower in June and July and are ready to pick by September. North American cranberries were being exported to Europe by the 17th century, and recipes for preserving the berries, as well as making sauces, tarts, and pies, were common in the 18th century in both American and English cookbooks. Still, because of their unique nature, cranberries were still being collected wild, not cultivated.
And you're listening to The History Guy telling the story of the Great Cranberry Scare of 1959. When we come back, more of The History Guy here on Our American Stories.
Friday is coming, and for the adults in your life who love the coolest toys, well, there's something for them this year, too. Bartesian is the premier craft cocktail maker that automatically makes more than 60 seasonal and classic cocktails, each in under 30 seconds at the push of a button. And right now, Bartesian is having a huge site-wide sale. You can get $100 off any cocktail maker or cocktail maker bundle when you spend $400 or more. So, if the cocktail lover in your life has been good this year, or the right kind of bad, get them Bartesian. At the push of a button, make bar-quality cosmopolitans, martinis, Manhattans, and more. All in just 30 seconds. All for $100 off. Amazing toys aren't just for kids. Get $100 off a cocktail maker when you spend $400 through Cyber Monday. Visit bartesian.com/cocktail. That's bartesian.com/cocktail.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and
congratulations to Easter Seals, Southern California, on their first place win for innovation in customer service at this year's Unconventional Awards by T-Mobile for Business. Easter Seals has used T-Mobile 5G to create immersive VR development tools that aid people with autism in addressing transportation barriers. These tools are shaping the way safe and personalized skill building is delivered, and for that, T-Mobile congratulates Easter Seals Southern California for their unconventional thinking.
Oh, hi, this is Chelsea Handler from the Dear Chelsea podcast. This episode is brought to you by Opill, the first over-the-counter daily birth control pill available in the U.S. I love shedding light on what's important for women's healthcare, and one thing that makes healthcare easier is making birth control more convenient to access. Well, let me introduce Opill. Opill is a daily birth control pill that is FDA approved, full prescription strength, and estrogen free. Plus, there's no prescription needed. Finally, the days of needing a prescription for birth control are over, a sentence I very much enjoy saying. This is our moment to take control of our health and reproductive journeys because Opill is birth control in your control. Opill is available online and at most major retailers. Use code OPILLOTC, OPILLOTC for 25% off your first month of Opill at opill.com.
Joel, as you know, my father served in the military. He was in satellite communications, SATCOM. I'm not sure if that's what they still call it these days.
Sounds cool.
But when I think about him, truly, and the other veterans I know, I'm reminded of their quiet strength, their resilience. Those are some of the qualities they carry with them long after their service ends. Well, at Navy Federal Credit Union, every day is Veterans Day, and they are proud to have served the military community for over 90 years.
Veterans Day only highlights Navy Federal's everyday commitment, because Navy Federal serves more than 2 million veterans by providing the support they need to succeed financially. They offer members exclusive rates, discounts, and perks, and 45% of their employees are directly tied to the military. So Navy Federal understands the needs of the veterans they serve.
That's right. Navy Federal donates to not-for-profits focused on veterans like The Mission Continues and Rebuilding Together. It's good to see an organization prioritize those who have served our country. And remember that active duty veterans and their families can join Navy Federal Credit Union. Learn more at NavyFederal.org/veterans. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA.
Folks, if you love the great American stories we tell and love America like we do, we're asking you to become a part of the Our American Stories family. If you agree that America is a good and great country, please make a donation. A monthly gift of $17.76 is fast becoming a favorite option for supporters. Go to OurAmericanStories.com now and go to the donate button and help us keep the great American stories coming. That's OurAmericanStories.com. And we continue with Our American Stories and the story of the Great Thanksgiving Cranberry Scare of 1959. The history guy brings us back to where he last left off.
It wasn't until the early 1800s that Henry Hall, a veteran of the Revolutionary War who lived in Dennis, Massachusetts, started to cultivate the berries. Hall noticed that sand blown in from nearby dunes helped vines grow faster. By adding sand in appropriate quantities, per acre yields of berries increased. Modern growers still spread an inch or two of sand on their bogs every 3 years. As the berries grow on vines, the vines do not need to be regularly replanted, and some Massachusetts vines are reputed to be over 150 years old and still producing fruit. Hall's innovations allowed greater production, and a commercial industry grew that, combined with a greater availability of granulated sugar, allowed the fruit to grow in popularity. As it did, it grew in association with the holiday season. The berries were bright, shiny, and red, making excellent decorations. They were harvested and available in winter, and as they are slow to spoil, lasted well through the Christmas season. The season was also known for feasts of roasted meat, which went well with cranberry sauce. Cranberries became so popular that after the Civil War, successful efforts to grow cranberries in New Jersey led to what has been described as a cranberry fever, a rush of investment to grow cranberries that was largely a bust, as the plants are finicky and the people hoping to get rich quick had little understanding of how to actually grow them. Cultivation methods slowly developed, including less time-intensive methods of harvesting. This was largely the result of careful study of growing factors and methods, and the finicky nature of the plant meant that the industry developed growers' organizations early on, which worked not just to help develop growing methods, but to collectively market the product. The success of a century of effort really showed in 1959, when the industry had already become a $50 million a year business. And 1959 looked to be a bumper record crop, 125 million pounds. Growers were expecting to make record profits, and likely they would have, except for the Delaney Clause. The problem was an herbicide called aminotriazole. A chlorophyll inhibitor, aminotriazole was used by cranberry growers starting in the 1950s to eliminate sedges, rushes, horsetails, and deep-rooted grasses from the bogs, clearing the water for the cranberries. Growers were instructed to use the chemical only after the harvest so as to keep it off the finished fruit, but trace amounts could still exist in extremely small quantities. Manufacturers petitioned the U.S. Food and Drug Administration to allow small amounts of residue, up to one part per million if necessary. But the FDA rejected the petition. There was a problem. New research had suggested that large, long-term doses of the chemical suppressed thyroid function in rats, encouraging tumors, possibly cancerous, to form. That made aminotriazole a carcinogen. And while the study suggested that a rat would have to eat a vast quantity of contaminated cranberries over its entire lifespan to increase its risk for cancer, the Delaney Clause said that carcinogens were not acceptable in any amount. When trace amounts of the chemical were found in a part of the cranberry crop just 17 days before Thanksgiving, the reaction by the FDA resulted in the Great Cranberry Scare of 1959. The chemical was found in a few shipments of berries from Washington and Oregon, states which produced a tiny fraction of the annual crop. But strictly reading the new Delaney Clause, and in an abundance of caution, the Secretary of Health, Education, and Welfare, Arthur Fleming, moved to limit the sale of berries from Washington and Oregon until the industry could develop a plan to separate out the contaminated berries. But the true damage came when a reporter asked the secretary whether a housewife should buy cranberries for her family. Fleming answered that if a housewife wasn't sure of the origin of the product, then, to be on the safe side, she doesn't buy. Suddenly, cranberries were not safe, contaminated with the terrifying-sounding aminotriazole. Despite the fact that only a tiny portion of the crop had tested positive for the chemical, grocery stores pulled cranberries off of shelves, restaurants dropped them from their menus, and some communities banned their sale. Life magazine published a list of alternative dishes, including spiced crab apples, frosted grapes, currant jelly, and beach plum preserve. John Dekas, a cranberry grower from Massachusetts, said on National Public Radio, "We had 40 trailer loads of cranberries canceled within 1 hour after that announcement. My reaction at the time was, oh my God, it's over." Ocean Spray, a cranberry grower cooperative, tried to limit the damage. The executive vice president sent a telegram to Fleming. "We demand that you take immediate steps to rectify the incalculable damages caused by your ill-formed and ill-advised press statements yesterday." There were efforts by politicians as well. Richard Nixon, then vice president and campaigning for president, ate 4 helpings of cranberries on November 12th. That made the headline of the Washington Post the next day. He stood proudly for the berry, saying, "I, like other Americans, expect to eat traditional cranberries with my family on Thanksgiving Day." Not to be outdone, the Democratic nominee, Senator John Kennedy, conspicuously drank 2 glasses of cranberry juice the next day. The Post then noted, "Bipartisan cranberry consumption." Unconfirmed reports said Kennedy quipping, "If we both pass away, I feel I shall have performed a great public service by taking the vice president with me." This was the first great modern food scare in the nation. It was a time of more powerful media, of a more educated public, of more distrust of corporate motives. People were bombarded with contradictory science and breathless news reports. The FDA tried to limit the damage, creating a testing and labeling program to clear berries before Thanksgiving. But the death blow came Thanksgiving Day, when the First Lady, Mamie Eisenhower, served applesauce instead. The AP headline read, "No cranberries for president." The season was a disaster. The cranberry industry reported $20 million in losses in January. Ocean Spray announced it had laid off a third of its workforce. Sales were 70% below normal for Thanksgiving and 50% below normal for Christmas. The industry needed some $10 million in subsidies just to survive the season. It was also unnecessary. In the end, more than 99% of the crop was found to be uncontaminated, and the few batches that were in minute amounts. Not one person is known to have been harmed by the berries. There's really a mixed legacy for the Great Cranberry Scare of 1959. It did give rise to some consumer advocacy that achieved some important reforms, but also, according to Dr. Elizabeth Whalen of the American Council of Science and Health, the 1959 Cranberry Scare set the stage for decades of completely unnecessary anxiety about trace amounts of agricultural chemicals and additives in food. The cranberry sales rebounded the following year, but the industry learned a valuable lesson. One of the reasons that the scare had been so devastating is that the product was almost exclusively consumed in the short period of the holidays, which made it extremely vulnerable to disruption. Cranberry juice was produced and sold at the time, but it was really actually formulated for the taste of growers, not the general public, and it wasn't marketed by the industry. But the industry started to create products like cranberry juice cocktails and dried cranberries that make cranberries popular year-round and therefore less vulnerable to disruption. And over time, the industry actually grew. The cranberry crop today is some 7 times what it was in 1959. The industry stopped using aminotriazole altogether, but it's still used in non-agricultural settings, like clearing grasses from highway medians. Over time, the zero-tolerance policy for carcinogens became unsustainable. Partly because of the cranberry scare, testing methods improved, and as New Yorker magazine noted, in the years that followed the cranberry scare, dozens and then hundreds of chemicals would prove carcinogenic in humans or animals. Testing sensitivity increased a million-fold. Strict application of the law, one researcher noted, undermined the ability of the food and agricultural industries to produce almost any foodstuff that was free of some degree of contamination. More flexible methods of assessing toxicity were needed, and the Delaney Clause was finally fully repealed in 1992, but definitive answers still elude us. Consumers are still caught between advocates and industry, still faced with conflicting science, and still confronted with what seems to be ever more common food scares.
And a great job on the production, as always, by Greg Hengler. And a special thanks to the History Guy for bringing us the 1959 Cranberry Scare. And it's typical of how regulations work and how overreaction in the news work. I mean, people love a good news story. And imagine the headline. And this is Eisenhower, right? This guy led America through World War II, but he wouldn't eat cranberries. No cranberries for the president. Scream the headlines around the country, and of course, put an end to the business of cranberries, essentially, for that year. The story of the Great Cranberry Scare of 1959, here on Our American Story.
holiday season, surprise everyone on your list with the best gifts. Tickets to see their favorite artists live. Choose from thousands of concerts and comedy shows, including Mariah Carey, Mary J. Blige, Matt Matthews, Metallica, Thomas Rhett, Trans-Siberian Orchestra, Sarah Silverman, and so many more. Share a memory together or give a gift they'll never forget. Find the most exciting gift for every fan at LiveNation.com/gifts. That's LiveNation.com/gifts.
We've all got a thing, an obsession. For some of us, it's vintage fashion, our cars, anything we can collect. They all live under one roof. eBay. It's where closets get filled with statement pieces and vintage finds, where must-have sneakers wait for you, and designer handbags are the real deal. On eBay, doors open to stacks of the rarest trading cards and a garage stocked with all the car parts you need for any DIY job. eBay's home to whatever thing you're into that keeps you up at night. eBay. Things people love.
Hey, I'm here to tell you about Up Faith and Family, your go-to streaming service for uplifting Christmas entertainment this holiday season. Gather your loved ones and cozy up with heartwarming movies that are perfect for the whole family. Stream faith-affirming stories like Baby in a Manger and feel-good holiday stories like Festival of Trees and Christmas in Rockwell. It's commercial-free. Stream anywhere. Start your free trial today. Go to upfaithandfamily.com. That's upfaithandfamily.com.
Hey, come on in.
Small Business Saturday is right around the corner. And so is that shop you've been meaning to check out. On November 30th, support your local community by shopping small on Small Business Saturday, founded by American Express. Pick up a new outfit, a handmade gift, some vintage vinyl, maybe even some local tea.
Thanks so much. See you soon.
Shop on Small Business Saturday, November 30th. That's the powerful backing of American Express.
How do we go about supporting government leaders when we may not want to vote for or support any of them? Do babies who die in the womb go to heaven? Are there only certain reasons in the Bible that are valid for divorce? Is IVF an option for Christian couples? I'm Pastor Mike Novotny, and these are just some of the topics I tackle in my new podcast, Taboo Questions with Pastor Mike Novotny. I answer questions for people just like you on essential topics that are not often discussed in church. To listen, just search Taboo Questions with Pastor Mike.